Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com. And I've got my friend on here, and he's got a company that I've been really admiring. It's ubiquity. I feel like every time I go to research a guest, they've got this blue little tag on the bottom right or the top left right of their site, and that tab then brings up a login page, and I know what that's about. They're using Sumo. Sumo, the tools that help you grow your email list and help you grow your traffic. And the tool was created by my friend Noah Kagan. And I remember when he first created a tool for Sumo, I got excited when he told me what it was going to be. I said, yes, I'll put it on Mixergy. I'll help out my friend. You're always helping me. You send me underwear. You do good stuff for me. And I put it on andrewwarner.com/blog or something. And I didn't like it. And I didn't tell him why. And that was when I disappeared on him about it. But he kept on building the business, and obviously he did well even without my site. And I did install it again on my site and take it off. And I've gotten to use it and see him evolve the product from the outside, from a little bit of the inside. And I'm curious about his process. How did he take my feedback? What did he do to improve the product? Why didn't he get upset, or did he get upset when I said that, when he did like one-on-one sales to people, to friends, and asked them for favors? What happened there? And then how did he build it, and how big is it today? Today, I don't need to tell you guys what Sumo is. You probably have it up on your site. It's helping you get more shares on Twitter and Instagram, and well, not Instagram, but on other services. But you probably want to know that he's got a new podcast out. It's called Noah Kagan Presents. I like his direction with it. He's kind of doing this podcast for entrepreneurs, but not exactly the way that I'm doing it and everyone else is doing. Not interviews with successful people, but thoughts for other people and challenges for other entrepreneurs. No, it's good to have you on here.
Dude, it's been forever. I was thinking the last time I was on the show, I was showing you my underwear in France.
Yeah. And that was a nice touch that I said, oh, that actually is impressive. And suddenly a box of underwear showed up in my house.
I like getting and receiving gifts that are functional and people use on a regular basis. So like when you give someone a food gift, it always goes away and then it comes out the other end. But if you give something like underwear, like, you know, it keeps it on their other end for a long period of time and they think about you. So it's like, I like doing gifts that people are going to use.
How do you know that stuff pays off? I know you've given out gifts at times in your life when you didn't have a ton of cash. And I'm wondering, like, were you just saying, it doesn't matter, it's only money? Or was there some logic to that?
I don't think gifts have to actually be that expensive. So I have a thing, like you can see my to-dos. So my to-dos now are always, I use note cards. Mm-hmm. And I do them the night before. So one of the things that's not even expensive is I just write a letter. Generally, I'm writing one about every single day. And it can be for anything. And so that's not an expensive gift. People can throw it away. But I think the fact that like writing actually a letter to someone is like going up so far above and beyond normal.
But that's even worse because that's more time.
But yeah, and I don't mind giving my time because you could make something for someone else. You could do something for someone else. Like,
what about when you sent me a Kindle at one point, right? The first Kindle came out, you sent it to me.
I enjoy that, man. That like honestly, like there's not many things I'm great at, but one of the things I take a lot of pride in is my gift giving.
Yeah.
So I think a few things about that. Like number one, I'm kind of always on the lookout. Like when I meet someone, I'm like, okay, do they have like not a checklist, but I'm like, okay, what's missing? Or where can if for someone I really like, I'm not trying to like buy friends for people I don't care for, but people I really like, and I, you know, it's fun to like think about that for them. I think of it as a challenge. So number one, I'm on the lookout.
After receiving one of your gifts, I forget what it was. It might have been like I was running in Washington D.C. doing over 30 miles at a time, and suddenly glasses. A bag of water that I can use as a running water bottle showed up, and I used it. I sent you pictures of it, and I thought, interesting. I mentioned that I run and that it's hard to find water when I'm in these random spots. Noah must have filed it away, and then he bought me a gift for it. Let me try it. And when I tried it, I couldn't actually live up to it. It's a lot of work to send out gifts, but what I did appreciate, Noah, was it gave me something to do in conversation with someone, some reason to pay attention for the little details of their lives that matter to them, but that would then just be throwaway sentences in an otherwise conversation that was more businesslike.
Yeah,
and I get that. But you're saying there's no logic to the math. There's no math to it.
It's not. I don't look at it as math. Like, hey, if I buy this $100 thing, I'm looking to get like something more than that in return. It's more like the people that I enjoy the relationship. It's fun. Like I actually enjoy that more than buying some gift for myself. So for example, a friend of mine is taking a road trip and I was like, oh, you know, it'd be really cool. Like a gas card, right? Cause I'm going to be needing gas. Or a friend of mine is, and just things I think people make people's lives better that, you know, I want to continue a relationship.
It's just a way for you to enjoy yourself in the relationship and to show affection. What about when you gave me that Kindle? I didn't know what to do with it. I was reading on my iPhone at the time, and an extra big device didn't appeal to me. And you asked me about it. Do you remember?
I'm not sure. No.
Oh, good. And then
did you give it away?
I returned it and I used the money to buy something else.
Good.
And well, you're okay with that.
Well, so yeah, two things about that specifically. So I actually think it applies really well to business. I hate Christmas, not just because I'm Jewish, but I hate Christmas because everyone sends this like generic ass card with cookies. And if they spent 5 minutes, they could have actually understood that, like, you know, I eat pretty healthy and I'm into certain, like, mountain biking and chess, and these activities are things in our company. And they could have sent something with 5 minutes of effort, like really thoughtful gift that actually would strengthen our relationship. So in business, I don't want to just get your shirt from a company I hardly care for. Like, why do I want to wear your shirt? But I do believe in business, you can actually like benefit strongly from sending out thoughtful gifts, right? It's actually a very affordable way to grow a business.
And do you actually do it? Because I know with you that, well, I guess maybe it's one of our friends. He'll email his assistant and say, buy me this, instead of going to Amazon and buying it for himself, even though his credit card and address is in there. Do you actually log into Amazon and put in my address? This is a little too specific. We'll move on in a moment. No.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, no. Yes, I buy the specific thing for people, but I just try to be thoughtful. And for the business ones, yeah, I try to get gifts that I think they'll see often. It'll enhance the relationship. But I think business and in life, I noticed that things decay pretty quickly. Uh-huh. Right? So this gives you like, I don't know. It's a way of like enhancing the relationship, continuing the relationship and deepening it on either a personal level or a business level.
Yeah. So I've got to say the best one that you got me was, and it doesn't have to be expensive. Just this one thing did happen to cost a little bit of money, but you came to my house. You saw that there was someone at the house looking for a bottle, a
wine opener,
right? And this was on a Friday night or Saturday night. The Sunday night, there was a knock on my door. It was Amazon. And they delivered one of these fancy corkscrews that we still use. And the reason I like that is you noticed what was going on and used Amazon Prime, which meant that it was going to arrive fast. And also you weren't going to have to pay for shipping. But you know, I don't want to make this all about gift giving. I just thought I think
gift giving could be an interesting thing. I mean, I guess maybe on the flip side, how does that make you feel? Like, how did you feel when you get these gifts from me?
I always feel great about your gifts. I generally feel very sheepish about gifts that people give me. Because then I feel a sense, like you introduced me to a guest who's coming on the site soon. Mm. He offered to give me a jacket. All last night, I was thinking, why did I say yes to that jacket? Is that going to corrupt my conversation? Is that going to change the interview with him? What happens if I don't like the jacket? What if it's not the right size? I'd much rather for like what? It's a beautiful jacket. I saw it on you. For $250, I'd much rather just spend it myself and not have to like be nice about the fact that I got the gift or feel guilty that I like the gift. Just like so much.
I already sent you that jacket, by the way.
Oh, you sent it to me?
Yeah. I already bought it for you. It's more of like I wish there was like some complicated thing, but no, it's just more like I enjoy that. Like, it's easy. I think that's kind of an interesting thing about people. It's easier for us to buy sometimes for others than it is for ourselves. And then maybe there's some like deeper lesson.
Here's why I think we got to get back to business in a sec. But I'm surprised to hear you say that. You did an episode of your show where you recounted a conversation that you had with the founder of 1-800-CONTACTS, you know, the contacts by mail company, where you said that when he sits down in a restaurant, the restaurant knows what food he wants and they know how to bill him afterwards. So he doesn't have to waste time ordering. He doesn't have to waste time paying for the food. And those little life hacks you're into, which is what allowed you to build Sumo into such a big company. And that's why I was surprised that you handled the gift giving so well on your own. I get it. Let's talk about now this business. How big is Sumo?
Yeah, the gift giving again, I just want to finish that thought.
Go ahead.
I'm sure we can edit it down. The gift giving is just like, I enjoy it. I think people, maybe the higher level concept is like, and I've really been thinking about this a lot lately, is like, go into the businesses, go into the activities you enjoy and do more of it. I think a lot of the times what we do in business is that we find things we enjoy and we're like, well, I should fix this thing or learn how to do this other thing over here. I'm like, well, you're great at this. Why don't you just learn how to do that even better and find someone who loves to do X? And I can talk very specifically about what I'm doing around this this day. Like, you know, for example, I like doing audio interviews. I like creating content. I like experimenting with marketing. I don't like audio editing. I don't really like writing. I don't really like certain organizational things. So with like my podcast, The No Kidding Presents, I've actually found experts that are freelancing in those different fields. And it's actually amazing to work with people in that.
Who, so like people who will write the intros for you?
people who will take the podcast and turn it into an amazing article, or people who will take the article and turn it into a guest post. So I call it content multiplication, which we can get into. But the point is that, like, kind of like the gift giving, I think so many times we have sweet spots. That's what I've been labeling them as. Mm-hmm. And I think people spend their time not enough in their sweet spot. They spend maybe like 30% when they should be spending 80% or 90% doing their sweet spot activities.
But you're really good also at hiring people. Like, I remember you did, when I was trying to figure out the courses for Mixergy, you came on and you said, look, people need to know how to hire. And if they're getting started, they might need interns. Here's how I hire interns. And you were really methodical about it. And also, you were in your groove with it. It's a challenge to say, I'd like someone to turn my podcast into an article. I was thinking about it for myself. It's a challenge to come up with these ideas for what you'd like that you want done, but you're not good enough at it to do it yourself and you don't enjoy it enough. It's a challenge to find people. How did you find these freelancers to turn your passion project, this podcast, into more content, into edited final products?
Yeah, two specific things. So, like, one, Andrew, you're married, you have two kids. Mm-hmm. You're probably not going to leave your wife. Mm-hmm. I can assume that, yes?
Yes, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, you're not going nowhere. That's the same with people in jobs that are at good companies. Like, they're treated well, they're loved. Like, where are they going? Nowhere. So two things have to happen. Number one, you have to know what you want to hire for, right? So you have to have clarity on that. And secondly, things take a long time for hiring, right? And I think a lot of things that we do, we want like short-term gratification. We want that STG. We want that bump of the STG. But the short-term gratification can't happen in hiring because someone like yourself is already in a happy place. So the opportunities are twofold. Number one, pay people as contractors. So I look at articles, I look at marketing, I look at anything I see out there that I'm impressed with, I try to connect with that person. So I challenge anyone, if you see something you like, connect with that person today, because a lot of times it'll be 2 years later, 3 years later, 5 years later. My business partner, frankly, I met through you, right? And that was because you introduced me to someone that you're like, hey, Chad, this guy seems kind of interesting and Chad's amazing. So with recruiting, you know, I've actually thought about this a lot, but number one, know what you want to hire for, right? So I know I didn't want to do audio editing. So I was like, well, who's Tim Ferriss's editor? So look for who's doing of one of the top shows, like look for the best. Number two, be okay that it's going to take a while. I think we want to hire people and we want it immediately. We're like, oh, you won't start today? Damn it. It's like, no, like put it on repeat. So for people, I'll follow up with them every 6 months. Let me go a few other tips because these are generally pretty helpful. With the people who are the best, like Tim Ferriss's person, or like there's a guy at HubSpot who I've been trying to recruit for 2 years. I've been trying to recruit him, and every 6 months I email him, how are things going? How are things going? Ooh, and this ties into gift giving. So finally he's like, dude, I'm not ready still. And I was like, well, all right, who's the best person you would hire for this position for kind of operations? And he said, well, you should actually talk to this guy. And I've actually ended up hiring his friend. So always ask for referrals from rejections. I do this in sales and I do this in recruiting.
What do you do to keep up with them every 6 months?
Generally, I use followup.cc.
It'll just be in your inbox, another piece of email that comes back to you 6 months later that reminds you to follow up.
Yeah. I mean, I think the three ways of recruiting, it's very simple. One, it's your network, right? Your network and all the people you work with's network. And you have to actually be direct with that. You can't like be like, hey, do you know anyone? Like, go search their LinkedIn or go search and ask like, hey, you know this person, how can I get an intro? Number two is your customer base. So people that listen to Mixergy or follow OKDork or follow Sumo.com, way easier to hire. And third, I generally look for people that are the best at doing something. And I want to work with the best, because when you work with the best, you actually can, it's a night and day experience. You're like, wow, life's so much better with this person. And that doesn't happen when you work with the people that you're like, oh, I always have to remind them to do something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
I do. Oh. You know what? It's such a drag. You start to think, what's wrong with me that I can't get them to do this? What's wrong with my management skills? Versus you find someone who's really good, and even if you screw it up, they still do great work for you, despite you. It's almost like, did you read Phil Knight's book?
Yeah, I loved
it. I'm bummed I couldn't get him on for the book. That is one of the best autobiographies out there. And in it, he talks about how there's this guy who was just so eager to work with him. I can't remember his name. But he just kept like blowing him off. He hired him and he kept ignoring his letters, real paper letters that would come in every day because the guy was so passionate. But despite ignoring him, the guy just kept building up his part of the business and kept growing and growing and became what do they call it? The butthole teams or something? Right, the people who are the top running Nike, who are so good at running Nike and so open with each other, they call each other the buttholes or something like that.
No, I mean I don't know, but I actually just saw the Butt Bongos perform, which is a pretty cool band.
Okay,
No, but you know, we have, there's a guy named Brandon who, you want to hear talk about random. I met this guy at the Arnold Schwarzenegger Bodybuilding Classic in Ohio a year ago today. He just said hi to me on the floor. And, you know, I think when you hire people, there's people who put in a little bit more effort. Like they send the handwritten card. This guy met me on the floor and, you know, we kind of went and worked out when he actually lives in Austin. And it was crazy though. So we're in Austin, we work out. And then he's like, you know what? I actually love photography. If you want me to take some headshots of you and your team, I'll do it for free. And I was like, sure, that sounds good. And he's like, hey, I know you've done YouTube and you're kind of doing a podcast thing. You know, do you want me to make a video for you? Like, let's record a video and I'll edit it for you. And I was like, that sounds good. And then now, like, he's actually making all my YouTube videos. Like, we go and record them together, and the guy is amazing. Like, we do a video, and he edits, and, like, now yeah, I'm paying
editing on that, and that is so good.
And he does an amazing job of that. And yeah. So, number one, you know, trials are a great way to work with someone, like a project. But two, look for the people, and I learned this from some recent, I love it. Look for the people who amaze you and do whatever it takes to stay in their life or work with them. And that's kind of, like, been my MO lately, where I'm like, anybody who I'm like, oh my God, you're so impressive. I'm like, let me just figure a way to make it work. And if not now, it'll be later. And if not later, ask them for a referral. Like, who are you impressed with? Because I'm pretty confident they'll have impressive people.
All right. The reason that I kept saying how big is Sumo is I feel like the intro of an interview or the beginning needs to be a setup that shows the audience, here's how big this guy got it. And because he got it this big, you're going to want to listen for the next hour to see how he did it.
Sure.
So do you have any metric that shows how big it is?
Yeah, yeah. I was trying to think of like bad jokes. But yeah, it's an eight-figure company, profitable. I generally think it's always strange when companies talk about people size, but we have around 50 people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've gone through a lot of ups and downs. We're bootstrapped. We went from me up to 20, back down to 4. We fired everyone. And then we've built it back up to, you know, kind of like a Phoenix hero journey story.
And this was AppSumo that got to 20 people, then down to 4. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And AppSumo was Groupon for Geeks is how you put it. A lot of us have bought stuff from AppSumo. Like you'll get an app that ordinarily sells for $80 a year, suddenly for $5 on Friday, but you got to get it by Friday, right? When you went down to 4 people, I'm sensing a change in your attitude as I'm talking about this. What are you feeling right now?
I mean, it's an interesting story. It's like, you know, I think what I've realized through my failures, which, you know, I put out a little bit more publicly than others, is that we all go through hard times. And so I think the thing is, like, how are you actually learning and making the future better from these hard times? And we're all going to go through them.
So why'd you go to 4?
We went to 4 for a few reasons. It's, you kind of can tell who really wanted to be there, number one. Number two, the business had predictable expenses but unpredictable revenue. So it was kind of a hard way to grow a business. And it was just like, this is not – and ultimately, you know, I was reflecting on this today, actually, because I'm not in the best of moods, which welcome to running a business in life. It's not what I really wanted to be doing, right? I got to a point where I was like, what the hell is this thing? Like, this is not anywhere near what I want to be doing. Like, it's actually funny. I'm reading Creativity Inc., the Pixar story. Uh-huh. And the guy, Ed Catmull, the book is amazing. I love it. The guy says, like, when he got a job at Disney, they said, well, you can do animation or you can work in the park. And he's like, and I think the park one was going to pay him better or something like that. And he said, no, I want to work on animation. That's what I've really wanted. And so I think in general, we have to kind of stay true to what we really want. And not,
you know what? So Noah, for a long time, you had all these businesses. Like you had Community Next, the conference that did really well, right?
Yeah.
You had a Facebook app business. You had a payments business, right? There was a period there where people felt like you weren't sticking with something because you didn't love it every minute. And if you didn't love it or if you didn't believe in it as the fun thing that was worth spending your life on, you were going to move on. And people were wondering, even close people to you were wondering, is he a bit of a flake here? Or is he scared of success? And this was around the time that you went to 4. Any truth to that? Does that resonate at all? I'm seeing like hateful eyes from you for that.
No. I have nice green hazel eyes. Yeah, it's actually a deeper like therapy story. I did have that fear, right? I think everyone has an Achilles heel, right? Something that you're very strong at is also a weakness. Uh-huh. And I think what's happened over the years now at this point in my life is that you have to embrace the things that you're great at and then not apologize for what you're not good at, right? And not apologize in the sense of like if you rip someone off or you cut someone off, you shouldn't say sorry. But just embrace who you are and stop apologizing for who you actually are. And so for myself, You know, I tried out for Sumo. I would say for 2 years, I worked on something like recruiting and some management stuff and meetings and strategy that I'm like, this is not what I really like doing. This is not what I'm great at. Let me find people who are great and love doing this and put them in that place so that I can go and explore and do the things that are really my like sweet spots. So that's what I'd say has happened with Sumo more recently, where, you know, I love what we do with AppSumo. I love what we do with Sumo. I love all the people there. But my general excitement is like starting new things, right? And so why am I so fighting it just so that I can externally prove to others that I can stick with something? There's a lot of things I do stick with, right? Like our relationship I've stuck with. Mm-hmm. Like I've stuck with health. I've stuck with certain activities. So it's not that I can't stick with things. It's just you have to understand yourself. Like I think one of the most powerful things today is self-awareness.
It's probably so you're saying those times you were continuing a part of the business that you didn't love, which is just maintaining it, being a manager, and that's what turned you off to it.
Yeah, you know, I've actually thought about this. I think about Buffer when I think about this, Andrew. Mm-hmm. I think anyone could be successful if they stick with it. So if it's not working, but you just stick with it and you keep working on something, it will eventually.
You know what? Let me give you not the counter argument, but let me give you a doubt that I've had about myself relating to that. But first, I have to tell you about, you love software. I have to talk about my sponsor. I forgot to even mention them at the top of the interview. Do you know Acuity Scheduling?
I don't.
You don't? Wow. One piece of software I'm finally going to introduce you to. Here's the deal. I used to try to book people on Mixergy, and no one would like book, and I thought they didn't like me. I would try to get people on the phone, even people who said that they wanted to work with me, and they couldn't get on the phone with me. And I thought, you know what? They just don't value the relationship enough. And then a friend of mine, Bob Heiler, said, you know, Andrew, I found this piece of software that I think could help you. And I'm always dismissive of software, just like you love it or you love new tools. And I've heard you give lots of software recommendations. I use MyFitnessPal because of you to record what I eat. Not today, though. I'm reluctant to do it. I say, you know what? It's not about that. It's about like writing the better word or coming up with the better approach. And finally, I said, let's try the Acuity Scheduling. I connected my calendar to it. I selected the dates and times that I was available to do interviews, and I embedded whatever embed code they gave me on my site. And now I started giving people the URL to my site where this calendar was embedded, and they could see my availability. They could pick from all the available interview times, the time that they wanted, and they could actually book themselves. And I knew that I could ask them after they booked themselves for their Skype name. So when I'm sitting here, I know exactly how to connect with them. Boom. Suddenly I went from chaos to order. More people said yes. And yeah, I felt better about my relationship with the world, that people actually want to do interviews with me. I now use it when I want to sell something to people, because I noticed that you're good at when you sell something for the first time, you try to get on the phone or Skype chat with people who are buying to understand why they're buying. I do that too. I like to get on the phone. I give people an Acuity Scheduling calendar where they could book time with me and we can actually talk. If you're out there and you're listening to me and you want to get more calls, you may not be doing interviews, but maybe what you want is more of your customers to get on a call with you or your salespeople or more potential customers to chat with you, you've got to check out Acuity Scheduling. There is lots of ways to screw this up, and I've tried lots of different competitors of Acuity Scheduling. What I like about them is it just works. And everyone on my team can use it. So if there's a problem, I don't have to go in and adjust it. Like if suddenly you mentioned I have two kids, if daycare is closed next week, I don't have to go in and close it out in Acuity Scheduling. My team can figure it out because it works so well. What are you going to say?
I'm just, because you did these ad spots, I always like fast forward. I do on the podcast thing. I hit like 30 seconds, 30 seconds, 30 seconds. I'm like, is it 30 seconds yet? So I guess I'm curious, like, and we were going to talk about, I bought an ad on your site, on your show. Mm-hmm. I love that you use it, right? And I love that you discuss, it's interesting. You actually, some of the best ways to do sponsorship is not actually the sponsor. It's the relationship you get from sponsoring.
What do you mean? Well, you know what? Let me close it out. And then I want to ask you what you mean by that.
Sure.
If you guys want to try them, don't go to acuityscheduling.com. Anyone can do that. What I want to do is get you to a special URL where you're going to get I just want to make sure. Yeah, it's 45 days free trial of this. You really can close sales within the free trial and close it out if you want. That's how generous they are with their free trial. You should go check out acuityscheduling.com/Mixergy. You too, Noah. Acuity.com.
How do you spell Acuity? Is it with a C or with a Q?
You know what? That's a good point. I wish that they'd have like an easier to spell name like Buffer. It's acuityscheduling.com/Mixergy. All right. What about the relationship with the sponsor? Did you say?
Well, so if for people out there who are starting their businesses or want to connect with certain people, one of the tactics that's worked really well for me is just give them money.
And find a reason to do it.
and find a, yes, exactly. So I've actually gone out and sponsored, like, I think Pat Flynn back in the day, maybe like 5 years ago, Tim Ferriss, we were already friends, but I sponsored his blog for 2 years. And that's a way that, that you can kind of like stand above everyone else. And then people will actually respond to your emails, for the future. Like, I think not John Lee Dumas, but one of the other guys, David Garland, sponsored his show for like $2,000. And then we became friends. And then a few months later, he actually was like, "Hey, you want to be on the show?" And I was like, "Okay."
You know, that's a big reason why people buy courses, that if you're, if you buy someone's course, you're spending $2,000, you get to learn from them, but you also get to build a relationship with them. I get it. Let's come back to this thing with sticking with it, because this is sure. like the thing you've stuck with the most. And I remember when you were dropping stuff out, I said, you know, maybe I'm in, going in the wrong direction, Noah, because I'm someone who always sticks with things. I hated school. I went to college anyway. I hated college. I stuck with it until I graduated. I'm like a stick with it type of person. And I've always wondered, maybe I'm making a mistake. Maybe Noah knows something that I'm not picking up on. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's good because you're married, right? I'll stick with it. And maybe that's why I'm single, because I don't know if I would stick with it.
Uh-huh. But you were saying earlier, if you stick with anything long enough, like buffer, things eventually work out.
I think the point is that like what... if you stick with Titanic, like let's say you're on the Titanic, you're like, I just stay with things. So I'm going to stay on the ship that's sinking. Well, okay, that's not that smart, right? You're like, oh yeah, that's an obvious example.
Yes.
With business, I think what I've noticed from people starting businesses is that they do it and then they don't get results right away. And so they give up. And so that's my point where like buffer, when they first started, Leo was commenting on my blog, like, hey, you should try this. And like, you know, one by one, that's what, you know, Chet Holmes calls it his dream 100 list. So make your dream 100 list of customers and go after them. And, you know, I think Leo did a good job of that. And so stick, you know, go with it, stick with it in the beginning. But over time, you have to realize like, all right, am I good at this part of it or am I good at something else? And then find the people that are can complement you around that. So what I've realized is that like for me, and this is why I was talking about self-awareness a little bit, like take a moment to go sit in a chair. Like I have a chair, it's over there. Can't see it. Well, I guess here, now you can go see it. That's my thinking chair. It's literally called, it's called my thinking chair. And I just take time to think about things. And so I spend every morning doing that. I call it self-diagnostic. And through that, I'm like, I've realized over the years, like, man, I love starting new things. That is what I'm amazing at. I love doing marketing. That's what I'm amazing at. Recruiting, I suck. Development, I suck. Customer support, oh my God, you don't want me doing that. But there are other people out there, Samantha, Jamie, Eamon, Anton, Chad, like people on the Sumo family, like that do it, that are great at it and love doing it. Like here's an example, webinars. Uh-huh. I did webinars for like 6 months for Sumo.com and they perform well and they do well, but like I literally, it's hard for me to bring myself to do it. Once I figured it out and kind of got it to the point of creation, like the 0 to 1, I'm very strong at. But that 1 to 10, I probably do like a 50 to 40% job. Troy is like a magician with it and he loves doing it. And the weird thing is I go to Troy, Andrew, and I say in a quiet voice, I'm like, Troy, you want to do this every day? Like you, every day you want to do this? And he's like, oh yeah, man, I can't wait to do another webinar. He had one today. He's like, oh, I love doing these webinars. I love connecting with the people. And what I realized is that we kind of impose our own beliefs on other people. And ultimately in a business, you have to find out like, where are you, your, I call sweet spot, like where it's your sweet spot and find other people who complement your sweet spot.
I see. So if I'm understanding you right, you had this business, you built it up, you cut it down to 4 people because partially because you were just not enjoying it because you weren't finding your sweet spot. You were forcing yourself to do things that you didn't like. And partially, was it also that revenue was going down?
It's more, it's not necessarily, I wasn't doing what I liked. It's just that the company wasn't going what I liked. And at this specific moment with AppSumo, it's a Groupon for geeks. We do promotions. I was just only, I kind of didn't know what I was doing or where I was going. And at that point, I remember we were promoting like a mobile, like how to make a mobile app. And I actually like downloaded the product. So here's a really good telltale sign if your business is off. A telltale sign is that like you don't care about your product anymore, meaning that you see like trash on the ground. Meaning you see something wrong with it and you don't pick it up. You're like, nah, that's fine. It's trash on the ground. Or you're like, here's another one. Your company emails. You stop opening them. You're like, yeah, I don't really read our emails anymore. Okay, that's a problem. And so with Sumo, I finally opened one of our products that we were selling and with AppSumo.com. And I was like, this is a PDF, 45 pages of shit showing you someone how to make an iPhone app and it does not help them. And that has my name on it. And that was the day that I was like, yeah, we're done with promoting these products. And this is not how the company is going to be run moving forward because okay. I started it to promote cool stuff that I just loved.
All right. So then you went on a smaller scale. It went from every day offering a new deal to occasionally with no schedule and only the ones that you believed in and only the ones that you found. And then at one point you emailed me and you said, hey, Andrew, would you want a tool that highlighted people's that let people highlight your transcript? And I thought, you know what? I've been looking for something like that. And you said, and it also lets them tweet. And I said, I've been looking for something like that, right? Because there's stuff in the interview that I know people highlight and put into their Google Doc. Let's make it easy for them. And so you sent me the tool and I installed it. And I know that that's part of your process, right? You're reaching out to people. You're getting a beat on whether they care about it or not. You ask us to install it. I installed it. And I didn't like it because there was no way to delete it, because people were able to highlight random words and it just stayed highlighted. And like, I guess those are the big ones. And I felt sheepish about that. And you didn't follow up with me, but I sensed that you were looking to get into software and you realized that there was other feedback like that that was telling you what.
Well, so I think there's two points at this part of our journey is that you have to look at the major problems in your business. So this is something that now we're doing on a yearly basis, where you make a list of all the problems that could hurt your business. So like one of them, and make a list of them, right? And then at the end of it, and through each problem, have three solutions or one solution, like very exact. Because I think it's very easy for us to criticize, but it's not very easy for us to be suggestive. So we've done this, you know, recently. And I think with AppSumo, at the same time, the main problem with AppSumo is that it wasn't predictable, right? It was very inconsistent. So I highly recommend this for every business. Make a list of all your problems and then specific solutions and then prioritize it. So with AppSumo, it was like, man, we have this inconsistent business. So that was a huge problem, that we can't grow a business if it's unpredictable. And what we ended up doing was, all right, well, we have to create our own products because that's the only way that we can predictably know how revenue is going to do. And so Chad, my business partner, came up with the idea of like, well, we're really good at marketing. We built all these tools for it. Why don't we sell these tools?
I see.
And it's actually been, our hypothesis has changed over the years, which has been fascinating with Sumo. So for anyone out there trying to do a SaaS business, I will tell you exactly what to do. If you're like, I want to create a recurring revenue business. All you have to do, so software as a service, SaaS, means you are going to do, the software is going to do a service. So if you want to start a SaaS business, just do the service before you make the software.
Okay.
And then create software to do that service. So specifically, if I were to do AppSumo, if I were to do sumo.com all over again, I would go to people like you, Andrew, and I would say, hey, you know, talk to you about your site and then see if your email list is important. And you're like, yeah, my email list is important. I'm like, well, if I can double the amount of people joining your email list every day, how important is that to you? Oh, that would change everything. You know, do you have any idea how much an email is worth? Or, you know, how do you send emails and how much is it worth when you send an email to sell something? And you'd say some amount of money. So basically getting it to an amount of money. And with that, I would be like, well, why don't I set up your emails, you know, optimization and you could pay me. And so I would do that a few times manually, and from there, then I would build the software. I think we did it a little bit of a – we didn't do it that way very well. We didn't really do it that way, but that's how I would do it for any SaaS business. I would do it. Just go do it manually. Go take plugins. Go build it really cheaply. Go do it yourself, and then you could start automating it. I think people get too excited to build something. Mm-hmm. Like I did this recently, actually. I made a big mistake. I started building some software for recruiting, like using your LinkedIn contacts, and then I was like, oh, wow, I have to go sell this now? And I'm like, it's just easier to keep building it. And that's where I was like, yeah, exactly. It's way easier to sit at home and hope that money comes to the computer. It's like me waiting for my wife to show up at the door. Like, I'm like, oh, my God, they're finally here? She's just going to be at the door? No, they're never going to be at your door. You have to get the hell out of your door and go find them. So with Sumo, yeah, man, we...
So you reached out to people. I'm sensing that the feedback was on this highlighter was that it was not exactly there.
So we were trying to figure out what the hell to do exactly. We knew we should sell our marketing tools that we built. We didn't know in which order. So that would probably be the second thing I would highly recommend is like pick some way to prioritize things. So we were like, we'll build this highlighter thing because we saw it in the New York Times do it. And then we try to build something like Optimizely because we already had something like that. And it was like just kind of all over the place. And so then we were like, we need a framework. So then what we did instead was we looked at directories like WordPress directory. And then we looked at like some SaaS directories that were out there and we're like, well, what are the most popular tools people are using? And then we could prioritize based in that order. So I think about this with my content recently for okdork.com or the podcast. I can make 10 episodes, but if I can put it in a specific order or if I can prioritize it based on something like maybe keyword searches or YouTube searches or popularity of other people's podcast episodes, then the order of my episodes will be more highly leveraged versus doing other content. Right. So if I can do one on hiring versus productivity tools, it matters if I do one first because that'll give me bigger leverage for the future. And so with Sumo, we were like, well, email is very big. Why don't we do that one next instead of just kind of all over the place? So I'd say for my suggestion for people is figure out how to create some type of framework to prioritize your decisions in almost all aspects of your business.
That framework, as you described, it seemed a little scary to me because you're saying you went to a WordPress directory of plugins to see what's most used. Wouldn't, if you saw stuff that was most used, end up thinking, you know what, there's enough competition, there are enough people doing it?
That's a fair part. No, I mean, for us, we already built this stuff. We knew we needed it and we were going to make it free and better. I think one thing I've realized, Andrew, is that number one, there's always going to be another Japanese restaurant in your town. Like, how many Japanese restaurants are there in SF?
Yeah, I don't know. A lot. Yeah,
there's a lot. And you're like, well, if the first guy saw one, there would never be a second one. So there's room for different types of dishes from different people. And secondly, what I've noticed through business, this is kind of more of a cliche, but most people I've noticed are kind of hobbyists. And they're not actually serious, right? So meaning that like they're not really persisting through it. They're not really working their asses off on it. They're kind of like, ah, this is kind of fun. And it should be fun. But if you take it seriously, it's pretty easy to win. Meaning that like a lot of these other ones we saw out there, I was like, these aren't really well done. They're not really improving it. They don't update it. Sounds like it seems like an opportunity for us. And I think the thing I just really want to hit home is that as long as you build something for yourself, so we were building it for ourselves first, but we just wanted a priority of which one to build, then you can't go wrong. So if you serve your own problem in starting a business or running a business, you will always be satisfied.
Okay. All right. And so then you hit on this email collection set of tools.
Yeah, we prioritize that because that's what we needed for AppSumo.
What was your validation process? I always admired how you check in with people, how you go out to people who you know and you have the guts to ask them to try what you're building. What's your process?
Yeah. So what I always do, I call it the Dream 100. It's from Chet Holmes. If you guys haven't read Ultimate Sales Machine, I love that book. Basically make a list of all the people that you want to have use your stuff as influencers or partners. And then I call it the WIFT theory. I don't know if I've mentioned it to you before, but like what's in it for them? Like everyone's life is selfish. And so you really have to kind of place it for the other person. Like what is in it for them? So when I reached out to you or when I reached out to Tim or when I reached out, you know, Eric Ries or Andrew Chen, any of these people that I had relationships with, I had them on a list of my 100 and I went one by one. I said, hey, we'll set it up. They're like, hey, I'm busy though. I'm like, all right, we'll set it up for you. All right. But is it cost money? Yeah, no worries. I'll give it to you free. So basically you have to remove the objections. And so for like highlighter, like updating it, we're like, well, this isn't really that important because we don't think this is the, we just did it as like kind of like, all right, let's get it going to build stuff. But then as we got to our serious thing, which is the email collection list builder, we're like, okay, what are the objections why people aren't using it? And then let's keep answering those objections.
I see. And so you're fixing those objections one at a time, but once you start to see objections pop up often, you find a way to integrate the solution into the software.
Exactly. I think one thing that we did, but it took us a year and a half, was that you have to understand, and this is a mistake we made, I think we should have had a tighter customer initially, meaning like we make email collection tools for bloggers. We make email collection tools for e-commerce. We make email collection tools for like Hispanic websites. And I think that would have made us a lot more successful. And we actually would have been a lot larger than we are today if we were more narrow on our customer base. We kind of made it, I would say, accidentally a little too broad, which it has some good sides, but I think marketing, customer focus, pricing, everything would have been tighter if we actually chose any customer early on, very specifically.
Yeah, I've heard that ConvertKit and Drip, you know, Drip.co started at the same time roughly. And the reason that ConvertKit just took off is that they focused on bloggers, where Drip was the email tool for lots of different people.
Yeah, there's a lot of examples where like the more narrow you go, the more successful you are. So that's something that we've had to do it kind of like as we're running the race. So we realized like super large enterprises, we don't serve well. We're not going to do custom stuff. And then the small guys, like people just starting out, we have a free product and that's pretty much what we can give them. And it's like, well, who do we really focus on? Which is the kind of SMBs, like the mid-level customers, specifically like e-commerce or info marketers, people who actually value growing their email list and have a real business. And so that's where we're like, okay, cool.
When you take an early version out to Tim Ferriss and you know that he wants good stuff on his site, that he really is in some ways a perfectionist.
He is. Yeah.
Right. And you take your first version, aren't you worried maybe it's not ready, maybe he's not right for it, maybe I should wait? Why do you go to him so fast?
I don't go to just him right away, but like someone like him or like, you know, who's very, he's got a lot of opinions and they're generally pretty helpful, is like Michael Stelzner from Social Media Examiner. Mm-hmm. We got him early on Highlighter and then on the share bar for sumo.com, and he would always have opinions. And it actually just helps us keep making the product better. And then the other thing it really helps us do is it helps us prioritize. We're like, hey, actually, that's not as important right now, and here's why. And we're working on this instead. And so it was great to get that kind of early feedback. And I just think you can plan things at home, but it takes a lot longer versus like getting it out and then just doing really faster, rapid iteration.
Do you do any customer development? Calls with customers beforehand or emails?
You know, we've done a lot of it, and generally I don't find it that helpful. Because I kind of know what, I mean, we can see in data what things people are using and not using, and then we kind of have an understanding of what we think they need, and that seems to be working a lot better for us.
Do you have a way to look at data and understand what pain or what problems a website has so that you guys can create a solution for it?
No one cares about a website. Yeah, I said it. No one cares about a website. No one cares about us. What they care about is their own life and then like how to make their business better. And so what I really try to understand when I'm talking to, because I do talk to customers, I like hearing, like my favorite stories are when someone's like, hey, I have this business, I put on sumo.com and now my business is bigger. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. What I try to understand is like, what are people really trying to accomplish, right? And can we genuinely help them? Like I went to go to someone today about Invisalign and they're like, we just don't think you're good for it. And I was like, one, I did actually want it more, but two, I appreciated that they said, yeah, you're not good for this. So for me,
that's the braces.
Just my bottom teeth. Anyways, wow. It's not part of the story. The point of the story is like, I do think it's helpful to have customers on like real-time chat. So Slack or Skype or GTalk to get kind of quick feedback. I think sometimes you can get sidetracked and like go in like dark holes if you just do customer development all day long. Like I think make a product for yourself, have a small customer board that you trust, like you actually trust their opinions on, and then work on it from that.
Okay. All right. You mentioned that you fast forward through the ads, and I should say that there's a faster way to fast forward. If you have a headset in and you're using Overcast, you can just double click and it'll skip 30 seconds. You can also tell Siri, but I forget what the code was to tell Siri to skip like 30 seconds. So I'll say that to anyone who's listening, but I want to make this ad so good that they wouldn't want to fast forward. My advertiser is a company called TopTal. They have these top developers. Let me ask you this, Noah. If you wanted to build a new product right now, and I gave you one TopTal developer, one of the best of the best, what would you have that TopTal developer create?
I would have them work. Well, for sumo.com, we need DevOps help. So I would have them do that. I'm not sure if they do that. For my personal stuff, we bought a Chrome extension to help for marketing. So I'd have them update the Chrome extension.
What's a Chrome extension?
It's called Leo, Leoh.io. It's a personal dashboard for your Chrome. So if you're using Google Chrome, you can install it and it makes it like a really nice productivity dashboard for you to get shit done.
Got it. Okay. And so
it's actually been a pain in my ass to find a developer that I can count on to build this out. So it would be nice if someone using through TopTal is reliable.
Perfect. That's the thing about TopTal. One of the things that they do is they spend a lot of time making sure that they get the best of the best developers. 97 out of 100 people that they screen end up getting turned down. The top 3% make it in their network. If you had an idea like this or a need like this, in fact, even bring your DevOps need to them, you go to toptal.com/mixergy. You schedule a phone call with one of their matchers. The matcher understands your problem, lets you know often, you know what, it's not a good fit. Many of my listeners have actually been turned down and they complain to me. But I think ultimately you'd rather not pay than pay and find out that it's not a good fit. If it is a good fit, they introduce you to the right developer. That person can work on a project basis, on a part-time ongoing basis, on a full-time basis, and so on. If you're out there listening to me, or frankly, if you're just in here, Noah, listening to me, and you want to start up with TopTal, it's created by a longtime Mixergy fan. And so he's giving Mixergy listeners 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when they pay for their first 80 hours. And that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. You got nothing to lose. Go to toptal.com/Mixergy. Top is in top of the mountain. Tal is in talent. There's a reason why they've been advertising for about 2 years now. Mixergy people keep getting results from them. And frankly, if you ever get a bad result from any of my sponsors, I want to know about it. I'm andrew@mixergy.com. I'm not just taking their money. I want to make sure that they do right by you guys. So complain away. andrew@mixergy.com.
That was a great ad. That was
you
a great
like that
ad.
One, right?
Can I give you a suggestion?
Yeah.
So I liked one that you said a lot of Mixergy people have been buying it, because I'm like, oh, others have bought it. That's good. The thing I would have hoped for, I like that you identified a problem for me. Like, oh, Noah, what are you building that you need help with? Two is good. The third thing, I think I actually would have closed it really well, because I'm like, oh, I need to check out this TopTal thing. You should just give me an example of something that they've done for you that I can relate to. Like, hey, guys, you ever been working on a software project, or you ever need a WordPress update and you kind of have to go find someone, and you're texting your cousin who said he was a CS major in 1994. You know, these guys have found the best people all over the world. They've already screened them, and, you know, they actually solved this problem for me. So if you ever have a problem like this or something similar, they're going to be able to do it for you. And I would be like, oh, okay, I believe it.
Yeah, I've done that a bunch. And I feel like by that repeating my example is the best, but also they've heard it so much. I feel like, shouldn't do it again. I like, and I find that the best feedback for the ads comes when the guest comes up with a need for it. And I realize I haven't done that approach in a while. So I shifted.
Good.
And I
asked you. It's a good one.
I like it. And I like that you were writing them down or at least thinking of calling them. All right. You built out the first thing. My sense was that one of the smartest things that you did was have that little tab come up so that when I go to my own site, I see a tab come up that makes it easy for me to log into Sumo to this set of tools. But also when I go to someone else's site, I identify that they're using Sumo and I could click and become a customer. Was that part of the plan?
No, it actually, that tab was kind of annoying. We only did it so that you could easily log into your site. And it became a big confusion thing because people were like, I don't know how to log into Sumo. We made it so that with Sumo.com, you can actually do any of the changes real time on your site versus if you think about most software, you have to go to someone else's site to make a change and then come back, refresh, and see how it looks. So the blue tab was just more to make it convenient. But we do get around 30% of our new customers and new users come through seeing the Powered By stuff. So Powered By Sumo.com generally drives around 20 or 30% of our people.
Meaning I see a pop-up on someone's site and I think, how the hell did they do that? Oh, Powered By Sumo, and I get to click and go over.
I've been kind of on this like movie kick where like I think about why do good products work and why do good products, more importantly, spread, right? So why does like a podcast episode, so like How I Built This or Noah Kagan Presents or certain episodes of Mixergy get more popular? It's because like they're a better episode. It's a more interesting guest. It's a more unique angle. And so the more that we can make a better product for the right customer, the more that's going to spread. So my movie thought was like, I watched Get Out last night. I don't know if you've seen it. If you like scary movies, it's a great movie. And I was like, man, why do I want to tell people about this? I'm like, because it's great. And that's kind of true for different business products. So like with Sumo.com, if someone has great success with it, great success, and you're, anyway, Borat, they're going to go tell other people. So I think sometimes people spend more time on marketing than they do making sure that they have the right product and the product is actually like working effectively. And then the marketing becomes very easy.
So how do you know that you have the right product? What'd you do to improve the product so that it got to the place where people want to talk about it?
I think two things are important. Number one is focusing on the essentials. So meaning that like of all the things you have, what is the actual thing people really want? So here's a quick challenge for everyone listening. And this is one of my favorite ones. Go on your phone, Andrew, you could do this with me too. Look at your phone and you have all these apps. Mm-hmm. Like what app have you not used in 6 months?
On the home screen, none, but if I go to the second page and so on, a ton. Why do you ask?
Okay, let's remove one.
Oh, an easy one for me. Well,
yeah, just do that one. Which one were you hesitating?
I was going to say Chipotle, but
just do it. Just do it right now.
If I need Chipotle,
you can just download it.
I hate that stupid line.
But here's the thing. Here's my point. So the more that you can remove Chipotle, the more that you can. I love Chipotle too. But the more you can remove the apps you don't do, the more that you'll focus on the ones you want, and then anything else you add in will be like, okay, yeah, I really value this. So it'll give you more attention to the right ones. So I've removed all my social apps. Because I found it distracting. I removed like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, because I'm like, I got nothing out of it. And the same thing goes for your business. And the same thing goes for your blog. I've been on this focus on the essentials, like on a hardcore kick. So how do you make sure something people want? Focus on the things they're really wanting and they're really using and remove things that they just don't really use.
What's one thing that you removed from the product in the beginning that might have been hard if you weren't disciplined about the essentials?
Yeah, I mean, we've removed two apps that, you know, guys have spent their life building. They spent 6 months of their life building it. One was a Discover app, which is kind of a link exchange, and one was a Buy app that helped people buy things on websites. Because and this is the same thing that's happened throughout our whole business. What is really working? How do you do more of it? What's not working? And kill it or remove it completely. So we removed those apps so that we could focus. And we went and looked at, all right, well, what's the app that everyone's using? It was email. It was like people want to grow their email list. So I was like, all right, let's just focus on that one. And make that, you know, top of class. And instead, I think most people, what they do is they keep all the apps on their phone. Same thing with like your wardrobe. I actually just gave away clothes to Goodwill this morning. I only wear about like a third of my clothes. So anything I haven't worn over 6 months, I just put it on the floor. I let it like marinate there for a day. And then I'm just like, just set it free.
You know what I did for that, by the way? I hate how disorganized my closet got. And I'm an organized person. I hired someone from TaskRabbit who's a closet organizer for like $50 an hour. Inside of 2 hours, this woman was a machine. She was ready to toss things out. If there was like an if or but or why do you want it, she said, just throw it out. You'll be okay. And I threw the freaking stuff out. I ended up with just enough shirts to wear one each day of the week and not have to have them washed.
I love that.
Totally fine. And then I started buying a little bit more, but now the closet's organized. I even had her go through the drawer that had all the cash, which was kind of weird, you know? Like, I keep cash, or I did at the time. It's kind of weird, but it helps.
And okay, so that's interesting. So she got rid of a lot of stuff. She left the essentials, and then how did you feel about that?
Oh, I felt great.
So I think that's kind of a point that I've realized. This has been a big kick of mine for the past 6 months for literally every aspect of life. So for your relationships, for your closets, for your phone, and for your business, it's like, so even for your Mixergy episodes, if you want to grow this show, go look, take all the episodes, which ones are the most popular. All right, let me try to figure out how I can do more of these types of episodes. Like maybe it's certain type of, maybe it's a female guest, maybe it's international guest. Maybe you like did a certain type of episode, like a story one versus an interview one, and go do more of those. Like, so that's, and then the ones that haven't worked as well, stop doing. So with my show, with Noah Kagan Presents, I've been doing like a bunch of variety of episodes. So like book reports, case studies, some interviews, some just like
personal. I noticed that. I was trying to figure out what you were trying to do with that. Why go all over the place like that?
So they're all about business and they're all about personal improvement. But what I've realized is that I'm not sure what my unique angle will be right away. And so I'm like, all right, well, I basically chose four things, right? Personal, business, case studies, book reports, and interviews. And I was like, well, let me see which ones are the most popular and then I'll just focus on those and remove everything else.
So it looks like the most popular right now is the SEO case study with Brian Deaton.
That was one of the more recent ones. He actually had a great tip in there, which was remove all of the blog posts that get no traffic. So I actually spent 2 days removing about 80% of the blog posts I've written over the past 15 years on OK Dork.
Interesting.
And what that does is that it helps you improve the quality of the ones that are there. And then Google actually gives those better ranking because it's like, oh, these are really good ones. Low bounce rates they have. The other thing I think of it just conceptually for all this stuff we're talking about, like how to make sumo.com better and our website or podcast, I think of it like a restaurant because everyone eats, so it's easy to understand it. When you go to a restaurant, if you have like a bad dish, it kind of like taints the rest of the meal, in my opinion. You're like, oh, well, this was great, but that sucked. But
yeah.
So compare that to a restaurant where you go and you're like, you know what? I pretty much always have a great time there. Like I go to True Food Kitchen downstairs here where I live in Austin, or Taco Deli, I'm like, man, I just always know it's going to be pretty good no matter what I have. And so I think the same thing says for your blog or for your podcast or for your software or for your services. Like, are they always consistently going to have a good time? And remove the ones that you're like, they don't really like this one. They're not really using this one.
Let me go a little more rapid fire here. So I understand why you would call the collection of apps that you have at Sumo. I understand I understand essentialism like that. But what I'm curious about is how do you know what apps to add? How do you know what extra tools to add to the Sumo collection?
So that's actually, you know, I think it's one of my strengths and weaknesses where I think the next new thing is really going to fix us. And that's why we've decided not to add new things and really just improve the things that are working, right? And so it's enabling the people that are there to say like, all right, how do we make these the best in class? And how do we make like Chad, who, you know, is our mutual friend. It's like, Chad, this stuff is already working. I think this is true for everyone's business out there. How do you 2X your existing business if you couldn't do anything new? And people actually, if they limited themselves to like, all right, I can't do anything new. I have this business. How do I 2X it? They would actually come up with really creative solutions. So Chad and the team has creative solutions that we should be able to launch and talk about in the next month or so.
Okay. What about this for promotion? What did you do that worked for getting those Sumo bars and Sumo email collections and all those other apps on people's sites?
Yeah, so the things have worked. It wasn't advertising. Advertising has never worked for Sumo. What did work is direct outreach. So like hitting up you, hitting up Tim Ferriss, hitting up Andrew Chen, and setting it up for them. Like actually doing all the work to make sure.
Give me your username and password. I'll put it up.
Give me your WordPress FTP login and I'll handle whatever it is that, you know, based on their type of site. But if it's WordPress, yeah, just we'll go install the plugin and we'll optimize it for them. The free thing really helped. Some partnerships, like we got AppSumo to promote it. Obviously, we know them really well. That's our company. Some things did not work. So ads have not worked whatsoever. Affiliate has been hit or miss. I would say that hasn't really worked. Webinars have worked really, really well for us, but mostly for our people who already are using it, not for like new audiences. Directories. So like Shopify directory is kind of like, I don't think people are thinking about directories as marketing channels, but that's actually been a huge channel. So go to Shopify and like those people are all running businesses, like right. Get them to use your services.
Okay. All right, let's go into the podcast. Why did you start a podcast?
I have a lot of, I'll just, my, I had lunch today with this real estate developer, and it was just so damn interesting. And I was really, like, the whole time I spent thinking, man, I should record this. And I feel like that in general a lot, where I'm meeting all these interesting people or I'm doing things that I find interesting. And one, I want to document. And two, I'm like, I think other people would really appreciate hearing these things. So like I had lunch with the founder of 1-800-CONTACTS, and it was just such a damn good lunch. It like changed my life. It changed my life truly. And so I went home and recorded what I learned about it, and then I put it out today. And I think coming back to what we were originally talking about, doing new things versus doing existing things, I've always liked promoting things. I've always liked creating content and promoting it. And so I've come back to like doing that, right? So sharing people's stories, promoting stuff that I'm making or promoting stuff that other people are making. So that's really why I've come back to doing the podcast and updating my blog and doing the YouTube.
You know, the thing I've told you, you and I talked about podcasting like 2 years ago in Napa where you considered it. And I remember saying to you, it stinks in that the ads aren't trackable. Like how many people have already signed up for Acuity Scheduling and they still hear me talk about Acuity Scheduling, right? How many people are never going to hire developers because they are developers or I don't know what, and they're still hearing me do it, right? Versus like Facebook, you can just hide an ad that you don't want. Anywhere else, it's so much smarter. This is the dumbest type of ad. The only benefit, right? And the only benefit of podcast ads is you get the personality, that there's nothing like having me in someone's head. There's nothing like you being in their head for an hour. Right, it's such a personal connection.
Just one thing I want to add that's actually pretty. We created this monthly 1K, and it was like how we built AppSumo. And here's actually one of the most surprising things about marketing this course is that we would email AppSumo every month about the course, and literally 12 months later, someone from the list would buy it. And I'm like, what have you been doing for 12 months? I've emailed you every month. And I think it's kind of this interesting message for a lot of business owners out there that like sometimes you have to just keep repeating yourself. Like if you tell your story, and frankly, Andrew, that story works, keep telling that story. And so with Monthly 1K, yeah, we kept emailing about it through AppSumo. And eventually, 12 months later, eventually still people were buying.
You know what? That shocks me, by the way. I've actually told TopTal, don't do every day. Just like someone heard yesterday's podcast. Now they're hearing today. People listen every day.
Do it
Why
every
not
day.
Just give it a break? I'll sell less to you, but we'll have a spot, a hole in it. They don't want to do that. I guess their numbers are showing it works, but I don't get why it even works.
I mean, we could discuss the psychology of it, but I've had a similar experience. Like if you find something that works, don't just do the same of it, do more of it until it stops working. So like we used to buy ads on SitePoint, and I'll give you an example of what didn't work, and I just killed it completely. So on SitePoint, we bought ads, and I bought it once a month, and I thought same as you, I don't want to bug people. Once a month is enough. Sounds like an old Jewish person. Nah, once enough. It's good. You're fine. And then so I went to like, and then Andrew Chan, one of my best friends and advisors, was like, just do twice a month. And if twice a month works, do weekly. And if weekly works, do daily. And I was like, why not? You know, I think what you don't realize by promotion is that we assume everyone sees everything, when in reality, like most ads or promotions get like 1% out of everybody, right? Like a good Facebook ad, people are excited when they get 2% of people clicking. Like, I don't think you realize that. That's like 98% of people don't do anything and you're excited about it. So I think generally it's like, do something if it's working, keep doing more of it until it stops. Okay. So like sponsoring your podcast, like, I gave, I don't know, whatever, 10,000 or some amount. I'm not sure.
For three ads.
Yeah. I think around 5,000. And the sponsorship didn't work, right? It actually drove, I think, like 50 signups because I had like an incentive. And I tried it on yours and Pat Flynn's, and it was good. I learned that like
Pat Flynn's work?
No, same, about the same response rate.
I'm shocked because people tell me that the best way for them to grow their podcast is to do interviews on other podcasts. Such a natural fit. So I would have thought that ads would do more than... more than 50. We only did 2 out of 3. I'm gun shy about running the third ad for you. I wanted to talk to you before we did it. I don't know why.
Well, you should just ask your audience what would make a fun ad, and then they'd do that.
What would make a fun ad for Noah Kagan Presents? I'm asking, guys. Tell me. Andrew at Mixergy.
Or leave it in the comments. I'd love for that. Shit, that'd be awesome. And then just run the ad based on whatever they tell you to do. I mean, to my point is like I did those ads and it did not work. So then I'm like, well, I made a list, and the article should come out on sumo.com sometime this month about how exactly I did the promotion to the show. But what did work is like being interviewed on other shows worked, but not sponsoring them, or sponsoring them to get to know the person, right? Because as we talked about earlier,
and then once you get to know the person, what's the benefit? Then you get an interview?
They'll generally ask for it, or you can say like, hey, is there a type of show? Like you suggest something specifically that you think would be valuable for their audience based on their past shows. The other things that's worked is like, you got to promote, like, I guess I didn't realize how much you should be promoting something through this. So it's like on my signature, I update my signature. So it's like, P.S., did you hear this?
Mm-hmm.
and it's okdork.com podcast. And literally every day someone's like, oh, I haven't heard it yet. I'll go check it out. Thanks. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's my signature. I forgot about that. I love, like, that's my favorite marketing, like set it and forget it marketing. So like advertising, set it and forget it mostly. Your email signature, set it and forget it.
Did that
it.
Work, the email signature?
Dude, it kills it. It doesn't grow at like insanely fast. Oop, pen just dropped. Good. Mm-hmm. But it continues to like pay dividends without me having to think about it. So,
because I like the way that you do it, by the way. It doesn't look like an email signature. It just looks like an addition to what you just said to me. And it's not until I get the second email that I say, oh yeah, that's a sig.
I think that's one thing in marketing and business I've become better at over the years. And I remember at a Google interview, I didn't do this well. It's how do you take advantage of your existing assets to do something effectively? So how do I take advantage of the okdork.com traffic or my okdork.com mailing list or YouTube or any of this to accomplish my goal? So my goal is 100,000 podcast downloads an episode. So it's like, how do I use and leverage what I already have access to versus new things so that I can accomplish my goal? And so
okdork, a post on there worked. Okdork is your personal blog.
I actually use Sumo. This has been a really helpful one. I noticed that if you're on a phone, you're probably subscribed to a podcast. So for mobile users, I actually have a smart bar at the top that's like, hey, you're on your phone. Like, go check out my podcast. But it's only for mobile people. Mm-hmm. Right? And so that's an experiment I'm doing lately. I updated my autoresponder sequence so it had more of my stuff for the podcast. I'm optimizing my thank you page. So it's like, hey, you just gave me your email. If you like me and you're interested in me, why don't you go check out the podcast now?
What else worked? By the way, if it looked like I got stalled there for a second, it's because I freaking went to okdork.com. I love the little touches that you always add to your site. Like, there's a picture of you smiling at the camera, crossing your arms, kind of a half smile. And underneath it, the caption says Noah Kagan doing his I know shit look. Like, those little things always distract me to, like, more than the headline.
I think you got to have a little bit more fun. Like, I have this stuff on my whiteboard, so I don't know if you can see it. So I have a whiteboard on my fridge. Uh-huh. Every time something goes wrong, I want to learn from it. And so I write things to learn from. So my word of the year is discomfort. And like things I've learned just in the past, like this is literally this past month, is stop apologizing. Because I think we all apologize way too much for everything. We're like, sorry, I'm sorry for doing well. I'm sorry for being successful, whatever it is. Choose you. I like hung out with some people and I didn't really want to hang out with them. And I was like, Noah, choose you. Just keep choosing you. You'll be fine. And one of the ones recently that I just came up with based on some experience I had was have fun. Like I was doing a show. I was actually interviewing, I think, with Jordan from Art of Charm. And I was like, man, this is a job. This is not something I'm like enjoying. So no matter what job you're doing out there, how do you have fun with it? How do you make it fun? That's kind of.
You know what? The other thing I noticed with you, Noah, was remember that time you said that you went from 20 to 4 people? It was a tough time in business. I remember watching you from the outside as you were going through that. I knew it was a tough situation. But then you went to you went to Cuba or something around then. I'm wondering, like, don't you at that point say, I can't go and have fun. I have to really get serious here because it's important to get this right.
Well, so I went to India. That was actually before we let go of everyone.
Okay.
So I went to India, kind of Steve Jobs, white guy trip to understand myself. And just, you know, I think not enough people spend enough time in quiet. I think we spend so much time with a device that when the devices are on, our brain stops thinking. And that gave me space to think about it. And I luckily had supportive people, Chad, Anton, Eric, who were there that could help run the company. And I think more people were there before I left. And then eventually, like, you have space, you get clarity, and you make decisions. And, it's funny. I think in general, people know what they want. But we want to confuse ourselves or add dust or grime to like avoid that maybe the hard thing, which is what we really want.
And what do you really want?
What I really want now is to create content. I want
create content.
Yeah, there's two things I want. I want to create content. I've been loving creating content. It's been really fun. And then secondly, I want Sumo to get to a place where it's invaluable. Like I want Chad and the team there and I want to be a part of it. Like we make a product that every small business owner online is like, holy shit, like how did I live without this? And so I think in the next few months, like there's some bets that we have that I think are like, wow, holy shit. Like how could someone run a website without using Sumo?
All right. Well, I can see that. All right. The podcast is Noah Kagan Presents. It's at okdork.com/podcast. Is there an episode that you think someone should go check out first?
I think the one that people really liked was the Jim Rohn episode. So there's an amazing quote. I basically read his book and I like just kind of dissected it. And he had this like amazing quote, which was don't wish life were easier. Wish you were better.
Okay.
And every episode, there's been like these one nugget of gold that like just keep taking away. Like, or the David Cadavy episode, he was telling me how he listens to his episodes like 4 or 5 times. And I think historically I've been a little bit of a novelty seeker, and something we talked about earlier. And he's like, oh yeah, dude, it's the only way you get better. Like when you write an email or you write an essay, you keep editing it and you keep reading it and writing it.
He says, keep listening to your episodes.
Well, keep doing anything that you want to be a master of. You have to just repeat yourself, and you have to go. And so like now I listen to all my episodes a bunch of times, and it helps me really improve. And I think in the past that I would literally record one episode and I'd be like, well, all right, that's done.
You know, I was talking to Shep Gordon before I interviewed him. Do you know that guy?
Oh, Shep Gordon's the man.
I love him. And he said he just can't get to listen to his own podcast, and that there's a challenge in it, not his own podcast, his own audio recording of his book. It's just so tough to hear yourself. And we talked about this old TV show, Larry Sanders, where the big joke was every night Larry Sanders would go home, crawl in bed, and watch himself on TV. And you're kind of making fun of how these talk show hosts are so self-absorbed, they want to watch only themselves. But the point of that was that the way that he got better was by watching himself, by caring enough about himself to keep watching it. And so that's been making me rethink listening to my own episodes.
Oh, you've got to. I would say, like, of all the things in my podcast, like, that's been actually, and I think that actually applies for a lot of different things. You're writing, like going back and reading your old articles, looking at your own products, looking at your own services. That's the only way you're going to improve it. And I think it's, and like, here's a simple one challenge that everyone can do. Just go get on the scale. Once a day, go on the scale. Why? Because you have to face something. And the more that you can face like small things and you build that habit on small things, like here's another one. Just go look at your face in the mirror every day, right? It sucks. I'll tell you, I don't know, maybe that's my face. And I don't think I have a horrible face, but like to look at yourself, you're like, what's up? And so the more that you can practice that habit of like facing yourself, the more that you can love yourself and the more that you can improve yourself. Mm. But I don't think it's possible. And I'm like a huge fan. This is just from talking with David. I don't think you can improve yourself unless you review the work you've been doing and then understand how you can become better. So like I did this episode with the founder of Alinea, one of my favorite restaurants in the world. I highly recommend it. And I'm listening to it again, and I was like, shit, man, the sound quality really is horrible. And I was like, oh, I should get better at that. So then I bought new microphones to make the sound recording better. And I did this other interview, and I didn't have prepared enough, right? Like, I went to Andrew Chen, and I asked some shitty questions. And Andrew, like, ragged on me. He's like, dude, next time don't ever fucking interview me without being better prepared. Mm. And I was like, I should just spend more time preparing on things. And so I prepared more now for all my shows. And then the shows are significantly better. It's like, oh, surprise. So yeah, I think in all aspects of life, the more that you can review what your previous work is, the better that your quality in the work in the future is going to be.
You're sounding a lot better now than you did when we started. What was going on? You said you didn't have a good day today. What was going on?
I started taking some medicine, and I think it's affecting my overall mood. So I think in general, as I talked to you, in the morning I do self-diagnostics. Maybe it's my hipster word for it. But basically, like, try to reflect on what's good, what's bad, how do I want my day to be? And I was like, man, I'm feeling flat and tired and blurry vision, some other things. And I was like, well, what's changed, right? Because I've been in a great mood. And I think the more that you, as we talked about earlier, remove the non-essentials of life, like your breakfast, like remove everything except the things you really want to eat for breakfast. Throw things out of the fridge that you don't really use, that have been there too long, and only have the essentials, you'll feel freer and you'll feel happier. And so I've done a lot of that and work. I've removed things I don't want to be working on. And I focus on the things I like, and I find people who want to do those things, and they love doing that. And then I try to understand the root of what's changed. So yeah, I feel just sad and kind of flat. And the only thing changed is I started new medicine. So I'm like, all right, well, let me experiment going off that medicine.
What's the medicine for?
It's for low testosterone. So that's kind of like the new fad, I guess, with guys, is to have small testicles. anyways, it's called Clomid, and it's supposed to increase testosterone and sperm count, because I want to make sure my sperm, I'm 35, so I'm concerned about my sperm, you know? They're my good buddies. They're my little soldiers.
You know what? I know women who are about 35 who are having their eggs frozen. I don't think we think about it as much.
No, so I was concerned about it. I want to make sure that like my little guys can still fight. And so Clomid was supposed to help with it, and it's supposed to increase testosterone, increase sperm count. And I'll tell you, I just feel like shit. And I felt a lot better without it. So, you know, I stopped doing it today. So in like a few more days, it should feel better. I think the point though, like in general, like whether you're doing pills or not pills, or people or not people, food, activities, just kind of understand like what things improve your life and try to spend more time doing them.
Are you gonna feel bad that you just talked about low testosterone here?
No, because I think at the end of the day, it's taboo. And the more that people can talk about it, the more that it'll become normal and the more that we can get solutions to this. And then like, it's not as awkward for people to bring up. Mm. Is it a little weird? Yeah, because people are like, oh, you got small balls. And no, maybe they are small. I don't really know. I haven't really seen a lot of guys' balls. But yeah, I'm happy to share things that I think more people are uncomfortable about in the sense of like, one, better discussions. So when I meet people, I'll generally be like, yeah, I'm not feeling well. I won't say because I'm taking the testosterone stuff. But I'll be specific, and I do this in sales, I do this in business, I do this in personal, and I find it attracts the right people, and I find like it enables me to have deeper conversations.
Yeah,
and then ultimately deeper relationships, because now you're like, oh wow, Noah's actually kind of like, that was pretty raw.
I know, that actually is something that I was regretting. So you happened to be in San Francisco, went for a run together, and we had such a good time talking about everything, and I realized, damn it, Sacha texted me afterward and said, so did you talk about the ads? And I go, damn it. No, I was talking to him about like running and relationships and all that stuff. So I get it. It's fun to talk to you, and I appreciate the openness because it does make for a more meaningful conversation. And I also like hearing one of the things that I like about the way that you think about business, even in private, is that you have frameworks. You think in a very organized way. And so that allows your ideas to be actionable, allows them to be understood by other people. And I found that good leaders generally have frameworks, have ways of explaining what they're doing because they lead other people. They need to lead with clear communication.
I think the thing that's happened with me as I've matured over the years is I'm not as much into the novelty. I still love it. I still like doing new things. That's what I've been doing lately with the blog and as I'm exploring new stuff. But I've appreciated the old stuff, so like reviewing my old work. The other thing about myself that I think others can benefit from or learn from my mistakes and experience is that like I do things right away. And that moment of hesitation, I just try to go into it and be like, all right, I'm not going to hesitate. Let me just do it. But then improve it. I think that's the part that people miss out on is that they don't actually iterate and they don't improve from feedback. So specifically, I'm doing this podcast stuff and I think more people need to be doing content multiplication, meaning you do this interview, right? But then you could turn it into a great article and a great guest post and a great YouTube video and a great social media stuff. But you kind of just put it out and you kind of have a shitty post and some transcript. But that actually has, we have some interesting content in here. And so I started doing it and I was like, man, this is cool. It's multiplying the content we're doing. It's getting us more leverage, but it's unorganized and it's not necessarily, is it really helping us? So I'm like, let's put together a system or checklist to make sure that we can streamline this whole process. So the audio editor knows when to do it. The writer knows when to do it. The operations guy knows when to do it. The email guy knows when to do it. And it was kind of like, go do something and then figure out a way to make it consistent and repeatable. And so systems and checklists generally enable you to be able to do that.
Makes sense. All right. What do you use, by the way, for your checklist?
Google Doc. Google Spreadsheet. Okay. I like spreadsheets because they're just like, it's simple. I feel like everyone wants to solve, use complicated software to solve things when it's generally like Occam's razor. Like the simplest answer is the truth or the simplest answer is the right one.
All right. Cool. It is Noah Kagan Presents. That is at okdork.com/podcast. And if you, Noah Kagan, want to have that Chrome extension built for you or improved for you, you should go check out toptal.com/Mixergy, toptal.com/Mixergy. And if anyone on your team wants to get on calls, I'm telling you, Anton is a guy who talks to software makers on your team.
I'm going to check it out.
I am telling you, he's going to love this. He'll get on calls with people so much faster. AcuityScheduling.com/Mixergy.
I've got a rock, Andrew. I actually had a 4 o'clock.
See ya. Bye. Bye, everyone.
Thanks, man. Bye.